My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's great to have you with us again.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, the snow is falling for the first time in Washington, but plenty of fireworks up on Capitol Hill. The most interesting thing, I think, John, is that the tax cut compromise now seems to be in a little bit of doubt in the House of Representatives after being easily passed in the Senate. A couple of weeks ago, this was seen as a huge triumph for Republican negotiators over the president. Now conservatives are abandoning this thing in droves. What's going on?
Well, I think some conservatives are abandoning it in droves because they feel that in order to preserve keeping taxes lower for the job creators and the highest wage earners, they nonetheless gave in too much on the P word, pork, with earmark projects as well as letting the estate tax mushroom. My own view on it personally is that this does not mean that anything is permanent. The tax cuts are not permanent. They only last 2 years, and really, none of the projects that come in are permanent. Rather than protracted warfare, a number of people just felt they would do what they had to do to keep taxes from going up, and then next year go on the attack when the strength of conservatives is higher in the Senate and controls the House of Representatives. They can undo what's done easily. This does not sell with a lot of people who think whatever Congress passes in terms of spending is the nearest thing to eternal life on earth, hence the argument raging and hence the disagreement coming from members of Congress to Rush Limbaugh to a lot of people on the outside that represent the grassroots. It's very interesting. I do think in the end the package will pass.
John, you mentioned some pork that's been added to it that's made the package a little bit more distasteful. When you talk about pork, let's take a look at the omnibus spending bill the Senate Appropriations Committee has rolled out. Mitch McConnell saying this is completely unacceptable. Nobody's had any time to read it. But the government runs out of money, essentially, at the end of the week. And Harry Reid says this has to happen now. Will it happen?
Obviously, whenever the specter of government being shut down and not doing anything and just essential government personnel being kept on comes up, there's always a balking and a rush to judgment to pass a CR. It's been this way for a long time, and any time the government doesn't run for a period of time, you see a lot of rancor out there, and people fear the political fallout. That said, Greg, one has to realize that the Omnibus Appropriations Bill will also make possible the implementation of the health care bill. Things such as the funding of 15,000 new IRS agents are included in this, as well as the personnel to handle the 1099 restrictions, which are going to add a maw of documentation to health care providers. People talk about piecemeal repeal of health care. But forewarned is forearmed. If they pass the Omnibus Appropriations Bill, they are, in effect, giving the tools necessary to implement Obamacare.
Very interesting. John, two other key issues that we've talked about before, and you thought they weren't likely to move forward, but now the House has passed a standalone measure that would repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which would essentially allow gays to serve openly in the military. Now it could be headed to a Senate vote as early as this evening. Certainly Joe Lieberman wants it to happen before the Christmas break. Do you still believe that it's unlikely, or does the momentum now go with those in favor of the repeal?
The momentum is with repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and this is something the president very much wants to sign. I was surprised to find the margin of passage for repeal in the House. Only 175 U.S. representatives voted against the repeal, and one saw the celebration of backers of the repeal along with Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Steny Hoyer. One would think that if the 41 Republicans stay firm on this, or maybe a few Democrats came over, they could stop it. We'll know in a few hours.
The other big issue that the administration is really pressing on now, John, is the START treaty. Some say that this is a fait accompli now. They voted very overwhelmingly to start taking it up. But others say that it won't pass without some changes, and if the changes are in, then the Russians won't do it. So what's the fate of the START treaty right now, you think?
Well, right now I would say that things certainly do change in a matter of days. And last week I thought with the preoccupation Congress has with the tax bill, as well as some of the other matters you mentioned, they would never get to the START treaty. That obviously is not the case, and I'd say if it does come for a vote, ratification is likely to be in the air. The question is whether opponents of the measure, ranging from Jim DeMint of South Carolina to Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, will have the tenacity and the energy to start using parliamentary tactics to stall it. If START doesn't make it in this session, it is highly unlikely it will make it in a session in which the Senate has 53 Democrats and 47 Republicans.
John, last topic. The Republican National Committee next month will decide who the chairman is for the next 2 years. Until this week, it was assumed that there would be a new chairman because everyone assumed Michael Steele would not run for re-election. And then, surprise, surprise, in a conference call earlier this week, he said he is asking for committee members to support him once again. Does he have a chance?
On Tuesday, I was in Mississippi with one of the backers of his leading opponent, Mississippi's Republican National Committee man, Henry Barber, nephew of Governor Haley Barber, and on Wednesday morning I had a surprise visitor in my office, Michael Steele himself. Henry Barber and other opponents had believed almost up to the end Michael Steele wouldn't run, although a number of them were certainly guessing. They are already releasing the names of supporters for their candidates, and Mr. Steele now has five active opponents running against him at the party's January winter meeting. Michael Steele defended his record. He said that he is building new contributors, that the only people who won't give are people who give to the 527s, which can take soft money under the new election laws, and that the criticism of him is unfair by opponents who never accepted his election as chairman in 2009. In other words, it's all inside baseball and personality politics. My own view is, as always, Michael Steele is very impressive in person as he is on television. On the other hand, one has to realize this is a decision by 167 operatives in a closed room, and he's got to please them, not the viewing public and not people who are in my office.
John, we've got to run. Thanks so much for being with us.
As I bundle up and pray tonight that we'll have our issue out early, I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill. And an early Merry Christmas to all.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America.